All right, welcome back to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and today's a special day because we are on site, on the road. Life Without Limits podcast has gone on the road before, as you know, but it was in Europe. Today, we are on the Pac-12 training camp tour. Been bouncing around the Pac-12 community with lots of our talent, but the one consistent force is Mike Yam. He's the host and the face of the Pac-12 Network, so you may know him as Mike_Yam on all social media platforms. But more importantly, to me, honestly, Mike is the most talented guy I've ever worked with. So thanks for jumping in. We're going to dive right into it. It's ball time. How great is ball? I wanted to bring something unique to the table. So Mike, welcome in.
That's quite the introduction. I will say this, you clearly have not worked with many people that if the bar is set with me being at the high point. But it is, I will say this, I'm like nerding out, dorking out a little bit. You started your podcast. I've made reference to your podcast on my podcast a bunch of times, and you are a true inspiration to why I started the Give Me a Sense podcast.
So no, that means a lot.
That is completely factual. You were grinding. And look, I got your setup here. This is a little different than how I roll. I like it. A little high-tech here.
Well, you know, you'll see a picture of this in the blog post, yogiroth.com, when we promote this bad boy. But I want to set the stage here. We are in the plaza at University of Oregon. And their plaza is a little different than maybe the one you're sitting in right now listening to this podcast. I feel like we are in a combination of, like, Apple, Microsoft, Star Wars. I mean, their facility, Mike, here is epic. We got great feng shui with a waterfall. You might be able to hear that behind us. The wind is bristling through here. Nike swooshes are everywhere. But, I mean, this is pretty cool, your job, man, that you get to go around the country, specifically today here at Oregon.
Yeah, I would say our job is pretty cool, the fact that we've been able to travel. I think your assessment and description of what this is like, I mean, I went to Fordham, you went to Pitt, you were obviously a college athlete, I was not, and just being around a lot of these schools in this conference, it's so different. My first training camp tour 50-some-odd shows ago, or whatever the total is, 40-some-odd shows ago, I remember my first time on some of these campuses, unlike my college experience at all. But it's really like Google and Apple meets education here at Oregon.
It's pretty epic. So, look, usually on this Life Without Limits podcast, which you know as you've listened to them, we dive into people's stories. Sure. We go into their background. This one's a little different because I want to take people literally right to the road. So we're gonna bring you back on early on in the football season to get the true path of Mike Yam. But I would like to ask, you know, when did you fall in love with broadcasting? When did you fall in love with hosting? And is it football? Is it basketball? Is it a competitive temper? What about this thing drives you and lights you up?
Broadcasting in general. So my entire life, Yogi, I wanted to be a pediatrician. That's all I ever wanted to be my entire life. And Justin Wahlholz, who is producing our show here at Oregon, asked me last night. He's like, when did you know you had a gift for gab? And I said, I don't even think of it in those terms because you know me. I'm not like in a social environment when I have to flip the switch, it's on. But for the most part, it's not. I don't roll like that. That's just not sort of my personality. I feel like I'm in a lot of ways a little bit of an introvert. But I remember I went to an all-boys Catholic high school and still had the pediatrician thing on my mind. And our priest that was there had said to me, boy, you know, Mike, you have a great voice. You should think about radio. And it never really occurred to me. I'd never in my entire life, no one ever told me I had a good voice. Never even at all even came into my head. And I think that just planted a seed. And when I got to Fordham and I was pre-med, that lasted a semester and change. And I always thought that if I could be, you know, before like Sanjay Gupta and these doctors, I don't know if you had this in Pennsylvania, but you know, if you watch local news, there were doctors who would do segments. In my head, that's what I thought I could have done. That was going to be the path for me. So the whole media thing was there, and it just wasn't until my freshman year when a guy walking down the hallway for me was dressed in a suit in my freshman dorm, and I said, where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to cover the Nets. I'm like, you're covering the Nets? What does that even mean? And he told me about the radio station, signed up there, and then sort of the rest is history. Kind of crazy.
That is crazy because you flourished. Mike went to Fordham in New York City, and we have a mutual friend in Dave Sims.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary broadcaster. Yeah. Called a lot of Big East games when I was playing.
Sure.
Now he's the voice of the Seattle Mariners. And there's this award that they give out at your university about being, I'll probably screw up the description, but basically the most talented broadcaster on campus. And you win this. So to me, like, thinking about it freshman year when the dude rolls in with the suit, you're like, oh, that's cool, I'm interested. To senior year, you're the best broadcaster on campus at a school known for its broadcasting acumen. What was that path like?
That's, you know, and it's crazy. I actually forgot about that. You know, the craziest thing about that is the immaturity that I had actually got me that award. And I'll explain to you that like this. So the award was for play-by-play. You and I both know I don't have a strong interest in play-by-play. That's not my thing. I love studio. When I get out on tour, sit on the Pac-12 Network, and I sit in that chair, that is home for me. I literally could not feel more comfortable. I feel like that's a second home other than my apartment in San Francisco. And when I was in school, they didn't have necessarily like the host award at our radio station. It was a play-by-play award. And I didn't have an interest in doing play-by-play, but I was a little bit of a, I don't want to use a foul word, but there was an immaturity about me at that point in my life where I said, no, I want to win that award. So I made it a point then to go and do nothing but play-by-play so that I could win that award. And I didn't think, you want to talk about crazy, and it's embarrassing for me to even tell the story, but my senior year, I knew I had a chance. There was three or four of us that were doing play-by-play, like getting at the bulk of the work, and I didn't think I was going to win. It was the awards dinner. I lived with a bunch of athletes, a couple track guys, three track guys in my apartment, and a tennis player. There were six of us that lived in an off-campus apartment, and my buddies were going to be going there. A lot of my friends, the people who used to come and party with us in college, they were all going to be at this awards dinner, and I didn't want to go because I didn't want to lose. Not embarrassed, but I was being a baby. I was being like the biggest little BITC, and you can finish out that word. And I didn't want to go. And I remember almost making the excuse not to go to this dinner. And, you know, I called home and I was just talking to my mom. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go. And she was like, why aren't you going to go? And I was like, I don't know. I think the sight and the feeling of losing is going to bother me so much. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what she said. And I don't think she said anything about not going or going. And maybe there was just like an eerie silence on the phone. And then I said, all right, I just got a man up. I'm going to lose. And I got there. Dave Sims, as you made reference to, he was presenting the award. And I literally froze. I can remember. It was like The Matrix where like the air gets sucked out of the room, where he literally said my name and I froze because I really legitimately from the bottom of my heart did not think I was going to win this award. And all I remember is hearing my name and my old roommates who were on the other side of the room just jumping up and screaming. And I didn't move. And one of my friends, she was sitting next to me, and she's like, Mike, you have to go. And like, I was literally frozen. And the craziest thing about it is the guy that I thought I was going to lose to, we were competitive in college. Like it was a straight up competition between me and him. And I think that was part of the reason why I didn't want to go, because I thought he was going to win and I was winning a lot. And I just couldn't in my head fathom. And I felt awful because he quickly left the dinner, and I still feel bad about how he must have felt. And it's crazy. And then fast forward, we lost touch a little bit, friends on Facebook, and we went to our college reunion. It was our 10-year reunion, and we ran into each other, and we were always buds, but it was never, you know, we were close, but it was the most interesting conversation I had ever had before with him, where he was like, man, I couldn't be more proud of you. You stuck it out. Because we graduated. We both wanted to be broadcasters, and we kind of fell down this path. And it was just a crazy feeling. It was just, and I couldn't be more happy for this guy who's done really well professionally in his career. I obviously went down this path, and it was, you know, you asked about the competition. That's probably a lot of it. Like, it was just this feeling of, I don't know how many people are more competitive than I am, but it's not that I have to win. It's really not. It's I hate the feeling of losing.
Okay, so let's go there. Because a lot of great competitors, and I've struggled with this my whole life, so I'm curious how you feel about this. I've heard from, whether it's Jerry Rice or Hall of Famer, sometimes some say they're driven by the fear of failure, right?
Yes.
Others, Pete Carroll, guys that have mentored me, and this is the school I subscribe to, is that you earn the right to compete freely, let it rip, to play in the absence of fear and not even think of that discussion. And I think they're two totally different buckets.
100%.
Both clearly have worked. Wondering what bucket you're in.
I'm definitely the first bucket. It's a fear of failure. That's 100%, 1,000% the thing that fuels me. It's
explain that. Dive into what does that even mean?
The best way I could describe it is what I had said before, which is I don't have to win. I don't even enjoy winning. I mean, that's like the sickest thing, right? Like, I have to win because I hate losing. The feeling of losing is, it's like overwhelming. Whereas if I win, I can't even celebrate. Like, there's no celebration when you win. Like, because in my head, it's almost expected. You know, and at least in this industry, it's a whole lot different for broadcasters. I mean, you played, you know, Division I football. You understand you were on great staffs at USC when you guys were winning, you know, huge, huge significant games. I can't even imagine in those terms. But at least for this, like, we don't have competition, right? Like, I don't work at FS1 where I'm competing with ESPN. But you and I both know how I act, right? I mean, if the SEC network is on, if the Big Ten network is on, the soon-to-be ACC network, that's what I look as competition. So, right. Like, I want to make sure every show that we do on Pac-12 Network destroys. And I don't mean just beats theirs. Like, I want to absolutely annihilate their shows.
Yeah, I would agree on every platform. I think college football-wise, and I know you work in all sports, but I'd put us up against any show and any network 100%. Any day of the week. But let's stay in that, because here we are at Oregon. You can hear the wind. Maybe you can hear the water, this amazing facility. You're going to be able to watch a variety of training camp tour shows on the Pac-12 Network. Tonight, which will be already over by the time this podcast comes out, will be Oregon. But this staff, at times, I believe, has said winning sometimes it's like exhaling. Like, whew, we got through that one. Yeah. We won that one. Versus, you know, celebrating. Oh, it's so hard to get a win. You got to make sure you maximize that joy. And I get it, because there's so much pressure. And I'm not putting words in their mouths, but I'm just saying, from an observation standpoint, I think big-time programs with the pressure of the money surrounding college football, it can get like that. For you, after you kill a show, how much do you enjoy it? How much do you just take a breath, like, that's it's over, thank God? Or like, what's your mindset after we crush one of these training camp tours?
Business as usual. It's crazy. Like, our studio shows, when we finish a show, I usually feel either good or bad about it. There's never an indifferent. I guess maybe every once in a while, I just feel like the show is just okay. But if it's a good show, I automatically focus in on what would have been better about it. Like, what's that one small little thing that would have made it a perfect show? Is 100% how
I
think.
So do you allow your, like, take me through, like, the Mike Yam self-scout. You know, the beautiful thing about the Pac-12 Network, and not sure about what it was like when you were at ESPN or other places, but we get, call it 6 weeks in the summertime when there's no games.
Yeah.
You work more than I do, so maybe yours is 4 weeks, but we get some time off. When you reflect and look back and say, all right, I did this well, did this poorly, improve here, more of this, what's the self-scout like for you? And is there time for, that was good, man, let's do more of that? Because I don't take you as a guy that the shows end, you're like, man, this segment, I could ask a better question. Like, yeah, you're hard on yourself, but you have a blast, you know?
So, oh, we have fun. I mean, but that's the there's a difference, right, where I can pick out, I can tell you the last mistake I made on air.
Right.
100% I can tell you. I know yesterday we were taping liners, intro bridges, and that was show 5 for us. I needed 2 takes on one of the lines,
right,
which would have been okay if we went with them, but I was like, all right, if we're taping it, we might as well just do it another way. And that was the first time in the training camp that I had to do a second take in general. So I know that. I know media day, I asked a question to the Washington State guys, and I had messed up the question. And I can tell you every.
Right.
So, and I don't, it's hard for me to let go of those things, but I know every single time I'm on set, the whole point is to have fun.
I love that, though, because I think, whether it's Coach Carroll, and I would bet Mark Helfrich is the same way, David Shaw, Gary Anderson, they can remember their losses more than their wins. And
100%.
I think there's something to high performers in that regard. So when did you know, Mike, in this podcast, Life Without Limits podcast, I have one rule, and it's I ask questions I don't
know
the answers.
Yes.
And I know you really well, so these are hard, right? But I don't know the
moment.
Oh, it
was hard for you with Dr. Gervais. Yeah.
Super hard.
I heard you say that to him, too. That's why I
very rarely have interviewed friends, you know. But anyway, you, one of my close friends, when did you know you were a competitor? Like, when did that click for you, and how do you define being a competitor? I wonder if it's evolved from Fordham to now.
I didn't know. I really, like, growing up, I didn't know. I liked to win when I was a kid. But I think every kid does, right? Like, I play with my nieces and nephews now, and we play hide-and-go-seek for, like, 5 hours, and everyone wants to win. No one wants to get caught, and we all scream and do the whole deal. And, like, they're little ones, right? They're, like, 5, 6, 7 years old. I always remember wanting to win and hating to lose, but it never occurred to me how competitive I was until, I'd say, like, college for sure. 100%, like, it became very apparent in college when you're interacting with a lot of guys. Like, high school, I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and, you know, it's like dudes, right? I mean, like, there's a competitive atmosphere, but, like, it was competitive for me with grades. Like, where do you rank? Like, how are you doing in your class? I remember my freshman year, my English teacher, Mr. Maloro, he had said he had made a mistake on a test on grading. And it was, he gave me like a 97 when I needed, when I really got a 98. And he looked at me and he's like, really? And I was like, no, but like that point might be a fraction of a point that I need down the road that gets me, you know, when we round. It was like psychotic. I mean, that's like, that's crazy. But like, that was the nature of my high school environment, constantly competing. And then even for fun, post-graduation, I used to go play like pickup softball with some buddies of mine. And one of my buddy's wives said, this used to be fun until Yam got here. And then all of us became, we have to win. And then I like paused and I was like, boy, I guess that's kind of the thing. But it's always just about not losing. So,
you know, I think it's a great character trait, you know, because, well, I get why it's not.
Downfall too.
I get why it's not where people might say, and I'm not saying this, but may say, oh, okay, maybe you don't make the softball league fun. But if you're going to compete, like I've always, and I learned this when I got to SC,
yeah,
that the moment you state it, you make the affirmation of I'm a competitor, then like it's on. The way you walk, the way you talk, the way you operate, the way you prepare. And my favorite memory of you is the first time I met you. You may not recall this. This is day one, almost day 5 years ago to the day,
yeah,
at the Pac-12 Network. It was starting off.
2 days from now. Yeah.
2 days from now. Yeah. And I roll in, and I'm up there, and I'm like the digital correspondent. We're just making things up on my iPhone. Or whatever I had at the time. And I said, hey, Mike, nice to meet you. You were great. And I said, where are you been staying? And you pointed to the ground. You're like, I've been sleeping right next to my desk for 2 days. And you didn't do it to, like, impress me. You did it to be like, no, this is just what I do. And from that moment on, for a guy who left the organized sports culture of a team environment, always trying to be around high competitive, you know, spirit type of people that are in a relentless pursuit of a competitive edge. I knew that from jump. I was like, this is going to be awesome, and I just begged to work with you as much as possible from then on.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. I remember that launch night. You know, you just made a statement a few minutes ago before you asked me a question about how important, you know, buckets of philosophy for coaches, and when they say, oh, you know, wins are hard to come by, you got to celebrate those wins. Do you remember launch night? Were you in the touchdown room with us right after that first show? You were probably still running.
No, I don't think I was like, I didn't know if I was allowed in. I was just kind of like a sideline reporter. I wasn't a big guy at the network.
Look at your eyes. We'll talk about that on the Give Me a Sense podcast. But we left the show, and I'll never forget this. Like, when people say to me, what's your go-to story? And I always tell this story about launch night, Pac-12 Network. It was, I remember my heart, right? Like literally 10 seconds before we go on air, I looked down at my chest because I wanted to see if my suit was like jumping because my heart was like ready to come out of my chest. But when we finished that show, it was still to this day one of the coolest professional, it is the coolest professional experience I've ever had in my entire life. I had more of a thrill launching the network than I did any show that I did at sports, at ESPN, my first sports, any of those things. And I remember celebrating, right? We go into our touchdown room where we watch all of our games on Saturdays. And at that time, Rick Neuheisel was with us, and Rick's wife, Sue, was there. And they had a bottle of Dom Perignon, which I had never had in my – I've never even seen a bottle.
You're
of
crazy.
Dom.
And hard to believe.
They, you know, we're in this room, and there's everyone from Summer Sanders to Glenn Parker, who's – I mean, Ronnie Lott. There's, like, everyone's in there. Lydia Murphy Steffens, our whole staff. Ashley Adamson was in there. And Rick gave this speech, and in that speech, he had said, hey – wins are so hard to come by, so when you do get them, you have to celebrate them. And then they opened the bottle, and we all took a sip from the bottle, which is still to this day one of the coolest experiences. And it just reminds me of what you said, because I guess Rick was in the school of thought of like, hey, celebrate those wins, whereas I don't celebrate a lot.
So this isn't going to be an uncomfortable question.
Let's be comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's right. That's right. Look, we're in training camp. It's uncomfortable for everybody. We're wearing nasty, sweaty shirts and pants, and it's 100 degrees out here. You are at ESPN. You're on SportsCenter, kind of the dream job for a lot of people who are trying to be hosts.
Sure.
And you get the job opportunity to come to the Pac-12 Network and be the face of it. You know, you and Ashley Adamson are our two faces. I'm curious what it's like to be the face of a network. You know, what does that feel like for you? Because I know you're very humble, and I don't want you to deflect this. I want you to literally take it head on, because it's true. You carry the torch. You carry the bottle of Dom Perignon around with you now for us, not literally. But it's a really cool thing, not just because it's the network. You know, you're going to, you know, potentially be the face of other networks throughout the next 50 years of your career, Mike. But for a network that starts literally from the cement level, there's nothing on, to where we are now, year five. Like, we've grown leaps and bounds. Curious what that is like for you.
I always get so uncomfortable when I hear that.
It's good.
I really don't even know how to explain it.
Like, because, is it responsibility? Like, what do you feel?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, your competitive level's high. You're challenging the bar every day in the office.
I look back. You send me pictures sometimes from back in the day, our first year of doing shows, our first signing day. People tell me I have, like, a young face, and I guess in some ways I do. We look like children on the set, and that's just, you know, what, 4 years ago. And here's how I would describe it to you. I never think about it in those terms. Like, I get it. It's like face only because there's only two of us that are hosting shows, right? So I think that's part of it. And then the other thing is, like, Kristen Bredis is the one who hired us, right? Lydia Murphy Steffens, you said cement level. There wasn't a studio when I auditioned. Comcast Bay Area is on our first floor in our building. We're on the second floor. They gave me a tour after my audition, and there was nothing. And there was, the control room wasn't set up. The walls were, the studio, there was nothing there. And they said they were launching in whatever it was, 2-3 months. I'm thinking to myself, there's no way that they launched this network. But responsibility is by far the biggest thing, because there's clearly a chip on my shoulder with regard to how I think the network is perceived with, compared to the Big Ten or the SEC network. Because I really do think we're killing them. And Kristen and Lydia gave me what I like to, they gave me the keys to the car. And that first week, I remember popping into Kristen and Lydia's office saying, all right, like, we've done a couple shows. How do you want me to change things? And I'm like, no, it's cool. Like, you do your thing. And I had never had that much freedom before. Maybe NBA TV a little bit, but not to this extent, where they literally let me say whatever I want to say. Don't tell me how to do things. I mean, it's badass. Like, it is, I don't think there's going to ever be a professional environment where I have as much freedom as I have here. But I would never want to let them down, because the reality is, when I see those pictures that you send me sometimes and I look like I'm literally 5 years old, and they allowed me the responsibility to do these things, I feel like if it's a bad show or a bad job, I'm letting them down. And I just wouldn't want to do that, because they didn't have to give me the opportunity. I mean, when I was leaving ESPN, I thought I was going to be auditioning with two guys that I had worked with. I was convinced the way there was, like, a lot of gossip and scuttlebutt on the Bristol campus about who was going to audition for this job. And I knew that there were three people because Kristen had told me that. And I just assumed at least one, if not two, from ESPN were going to audition. And that wasn't the case. But there were so many options. They could have gone with established guys. They could, you know, and I wasn't an established guy. I mean, I was down, you know, middle of the pack at ESPN, if that. They didn't have to give me the keys to the car, so to speak. So I never would want to let them down. And then the other thing is, too, like, working with you guys, like, you grind more than anyone. I mean, geez, before we even came over to campus, you're going through videos and listening to podcasts and just, you know, doing the lonely work, as you like to say. If I don't allow you guys, you know, Nick Aliotti's doing the show with us because we're out of Oregon today. But if you guys aren't having fun or aren't showcased, then it's a bad job by me. And that would be, you know, I wouldn't want you guys to get off the set and be like, oh man, yeah, I'm like, what the hell was that? You know, or I had this nugget and I didn't get a chance to say this because Mike thought he was the analyst today. Like, that would be a bad job by me.
Okay. Okay. All right. So last couple, we'll get you out of here, 'cause we got a show we got to knock out. Thanks for answering the question pseudo-ly head on. Appreciate that.
I hope that was head
on. No, you did.
I feel like I rambled a little bit.
No, it was good. It was good, man. We've been in half the campuses now in the Pac-12 conference for training camp. When you go to these campuses, number one, the respect given you from head coaches is really cool to watch as an analyst. You know, these guys clearly admire the work that you do. Curious what your takeaway is in terms of how you're applying it to your job. Because you're around high performers, what, 6-7 days in a row right now in August at training camps. I mean, we've been at both schools in L.A.,
sure,
both in Northern California, both in Oregon. Each leader of those programs, from Jim Mora, Clay Helton, David Shaw, Sonny Dykes, Mark Helfrich, Gary Anderson, they all have unique traits. Curious if while you're interviewing, while you're observing, if there's things you're saying, you know what, all right, as the face, which I know you hate, of this network, but the leader of it, at least on air, and the host of all of our major shows along with Ashley, what do you make sure that you take from them, or what have you taken thus far in training camp this year?
Literally every single coach that I interact with, there's one bit of their personality that I admire and I try to mimic. You know, we're here at Oregon. Mark Helfrich is sneaky funny. Like, he is sarcastic, dry sense of humor. And I think that's an attribute that's really important, especially for what we do, right? So I think there's that aspect where he's able to take the seriousness of his job and also have some fun with it. Rich Rodriguez is another guy, so boisterous, who can work a room probably better than anyone. Gary Anderson, another guy, we just spent some time with him. Gary's got this ability to be very, very normal. And I know that people were like, I don't know how else to explain it, but very normal and really take ownership. I always tell a great story because when people lose, sometimes it's really hard. Like, how many guys, I mean, when you lost a game of Pitt, like, did you want to talk to the media? Like, most guys don't want
to
do that.
You don't want to talk to your parents.
No one, yeah. Like, you're just, you're pissed, you're upset, you're thinking about what you could have done better. And it's not easy. And I'll never forget, and I always tell the story about Larry Kraskowiak, who's the head coach at Utah for their basketball program. He takes over that program, and they are abysmal, abysmal. They literally are beating just the Little Sisters of the Poor. And he would come on every single week on our show and just be a normal guy and own up to every single loss. And I remember saying to him at the end of the season, hey, coach, like, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Because he always had a really good attitude. And there were some coaches at the top of the conference at that time that would come off of a loss, and it would be – they'd put it on for the camera. I mean, just call a spade. But, you know, off camera, they would just have like a – they would be down, a little bit of an attitude, like, oh, my God, I don't want to do this. And I remember Larry saying to me, Mike, it's not going to be like this forever, and it's going to change real quick. And sure enough, fast forward, they're an NCAA tournament team real fast. He's propelling that team. So in my mind, it's ownership. And something, you know, even working with you guys, like – someone had said this to me about a year ago and it never occurred to me, but Mike, if you're down, everyone else follows your lead. And that's never thought of it in those terms. Cause every other place that I've been, it's revolving door for hosts on shows, and Pac-12 is not that way. I mean, I'm assigned to a show and I do those shows, and it's hard. That's hard for me because I take it so serious. And if there's one thing that goes wrong, I don't want it to go wrong. So I want everyone to be at this peak level. And I think I get on people, and that's I don't know what my reputation is. I think some people probably don't like working with me because of that aspect, but I just want the shows to be good. That's as simple as that. And I think if everyone understands that, then maybe my perception is a little different. So.
Well, I love that. All right, so we're gonna finish this thing off like we always do here. Sure. On the Life of the Lemons podcast, I'm gonna state a word or a phrase, and I'd like your instant reaction here. Okay. Interviewee. What would you rather?
I'd love to do the interview. I don't want to. I'm uncomfortable answering questions. So.
Well, you're killing it right now.
No, I just, yeah. Because the interviewer is never the focal point, right? It's the person being interviewed, and I feel my job is to showcase that person. I like being point guard, like passing. I'm a big passer.
When someone is answering a question that you ask them, you are doing what?
Having them give me a sense.
Good plug right there.
I'm having them describe their feelings or putting me in their shoes or their situation, or explaining to me or telling me a story, something that I don't know. Even if I know the answer, I want them to explain it to me like I don't know.
Most critical element of being a host is?
Ooh. As in, like, what do I look for?
What do you think the most important element of your job is?
Smooth and transitions. Those are by far the most, in my opinion, it's smooth and transitions as a host. Yeah.
How do you feel about the word vulnerability?
Oh, I hate it. Because it's hard to be there. So.
But there's times in your job where you have to state statements. You did it early on in the training camp tour. Unfortunately, the Pac-12 player from Arizona passed away.
Yeah.
You've done it in the past in your career. Do you allow yourself to feel that? Like, what is your responsibility in those moments? Because it's unique, I feel like.
Oh, well, if it's a tragedy.
We've seen anchors break down on camera before.
That's hard, man. That's, you know, I remember when 9/11 hit.
Close to home. You grew up in New Jersey.
Grew up in Jersey. You know, I remember being on campus. You could see the smoke from campus, and we were going to do a show. I didn't do the show. My cousin passed away. You can't. You know, like, whenever there's tragedy like that, I always feel like my mind automatically goes to what's their family feeling like. That's hard. Those are the hard moments. When you said vulnerable, because I feel like the job itself is, because you're out there, right?
Right.
Like, you're a target or I shouldn't say target, but you're the someone that people are going to judge, make a reaction to, whether it's right or wrong. So, like, there's that aspect of it. But I'm not the vulnerable one, right? Like, it's just, like, I'm able to kind of, like, throw that to the side.
Right, you're delivering.
Because it's just like, hey, I'm the medium is how I look at it.
USC football.
Juggernauts, yeah.
Okay, okay. September's a good, an interesting month.
Yeah.
UCLA, Bruins, 2016. Pause right now.
Yeah, I mean, because immediately, the first two words that jump in my head are Josh Rosen, like right off the bat. And lucky. And not in a bad way, I mean, like, in a fortunate way.
That they have him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a baller.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going up the coast. The Cal Bears, 2016.
Sonny Dykes, love them. I pray for their defense. I pray for their secondary.
Okay, okay. You and Roxy Bernstein both, I'm sure, are the Pac-12 Network.
Yeah.
The Stanford Cardinal, 2016 football squad.
Big boys. Big boys is, I mean, every time we're on that campus, there's three teams that always look like they have a team of football players. Take it from a guy that's 5'8", 150. It's SC, it's Utah, and it's Stanford. They look like men. And talk about lucky and fortunate, they are... If I could do college again 10 times, 8 times I would do Fordham, 1 time I would do Stanford, and 1 time I'd do Pepperdine, because being at the beach has got to be pretty cool. But those athletes, man, they don't... I'm sure they do, but maybe they don't. I have no idea. But the resources and being on that campus, it's so special there.
All right, last couple will get you out of here. Obviously, the Beavers, 2016. What do you got?
Arrow pointing up. In Gary, I trust.
Ducks?
As I look at Google Education campus right now, I just think high tech. I call this place the Starship Enterprise of college football facilities.
We always ask everybody on this podcast, Mike, what do you feel about the word limits?
Don't have them. Don't set them. Don't set them. I don't know if I set goals, but I don't set limits. Like, I couldn't tell you what the next step is. That's like trying to evaluate is... It's a good problem to have.
And then finally, Mike, of course, how do you feel about yoga class?
One time, hot yoga with Yogi Roth. Some people that I wish were probably wearing a little bit more clothing in the class than they did. And the experience that I'll never forget. Hey, I'm just going to drop down my mat in the water, and then I'm going to hop into the sauna. You want to come in? I'm looking, and I go into the room. I drop my mat down, and I go, do you need to lather up in a sauna? I'm like, dude, I'm going to be in this room for 20 seconds. I'm going to be drenched. Yoga's tough, man. Hot yoga is tough.
I love it. Oh, you're tough too, man. This has been a blast. This is just the first of many times you're going to come on. Now, also, Mike has a podcast. Give Me a Sense podcast.
Yeah.
Subscribe, rate,
and review.
You've been having fun with that?
It's been. You're the biggest reason why I started the show. No. I've told you that. I don't know if you believe me, but legitimately, the biggest reason why I started the show. Insanely gratifying experience. Way more work than I ever thought it was going to be. Like, way more work than I ever thought it was going to be. But it's been cool, and it's an appreciation for all the other podcasts that I had worked on, where all I had to do was host it.
Yeah.
And everyone else, you know, we had staffs that used to put them together, and now I'm sitting at my desk editing and going, oh, I had to reteach myself that. That was technology has changed since my first radio job when I was editing 15 years ago.
Well, we should state it is trending on iTunes, Mike Yam's podcast. Give Me a Sense podcast. Follow him at Mike_Yam. You heard that horn. That means Oregon practice has started. How great is ball? We are diving in to the Ducks and the Pac-12 Network. Make sure you check us out all season long. Yam will be hosting all the studio shows. I'll be bouncing around. And, Mike, you're coming back. We're going to go mid-season.
Let's do it.
Review with Mike Yam.
I'm ready.
All right, beautiful, man. Thanks a lot. This is the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm Yogi Roth. Like we always say as we end this thing, Mike, the only limits that you have in life are the ones you set yourself. All right, later.